What's up, guys? This is Jacques. Welcome back to Unpopular. We've got a lot to talk about this week, but before I get into it, I just want to remind you all, if you can please leave me a review either through the Apple Podcast app if you're on iPhone or on podchaser.com if you're on Android. Especially if you're Australian, by the way. My American listeners are legends when it comes to leaving me reviews, but the Aussies are slacking. They've been slacking since I launched the podcast. So Aussies, come on, get in there. Please leave me a review. Also, please share the podcast with your friends if you know people that you think will like it. Like, that really helps me grow, and it helps a lot. Like, you can post the pod on your Twitter and Instagram and tag me at UnpopularJP. I always love that, and it just really, like, gets the word out there. There's so many podcasts now, and it's, like, really hard to stand out. Like, even though my pod's doing well for, like, a new podcast, it's still, like, there's so much competition out there. So whenever you guys, like, do post and review or support me or buy me a coffee, like, any of that, it just helps me so much, and I appreciate it so much. Okay, so let's get into, like, the stuff this week, because there's so much. This episode is actually a little bit political, kind of. Like, it's not, like, politics at all. It's just some, like, sensitive topics here and there, and then I talk about some of this Chris Cuomo stuff, but from, like, a media/celebrity perspective, and then I kind of have a story about it, how I fell out with a friend over politics. But I put that segment at the end. So if you don't want to hear that, just stop listening when it gets to that part, because some of you do message me and you're like, I don't want to hear anything about politics. Other people tell me that they do want to hear it. So I'm never going to be, like, super political, but when I do, I don't know. I think it's, again, I always say this, but I feel like it's more media criticism as opposed to politics. But I'm putting that at the end, so feel free to skip that part. I also have another update on the Bachelor race scandal, which just never ends. So I'm getting into, like, Chris Harrison's apology and some other stuff related to that. I'm getting into the latest Bravo stuff too. So if you only listen to me for Bravo and, you know, you skip everything else, which I'm sure there's a few of you that do, I made sure I covered the Below Deck sailing yacht premiere, some of the latest Housewives stuff, some news, and Summer House too, because they just had a really good episode. I also get right into all the latest Meghan Markle mess, like from her Oprah interview to, like, Bethany Frankel tweeting about it, which has broke the internet. I'm a little scared to put that out, to be honest, because I recorded it all yesterday, like right after watching the Oprah interview. I live streamed it here on, like, an illegal stream that I found on Twitter. Then I just jumped on and just did a pretty much like a hot take fresh out the oven on Bethany and Meghan and everything. And then, like, I woke up today to a bunch of random Housewives, like, stan accounts calling me racist, which isn't the first time that's happened. Well, not a bunch, like, a few of them did. Like, it was just, like, a small handful. And some of my followers, like, DM'd to me, and I was just thinking, like, oh God, like, what have I done? Like, why are people saying this? What have I been caught doing now? And then I saw this tweet that they were sharing around about me, and I was just like, wait, that's it? So I get into this more in the whole Meghan segment, which I recorded later in this episode, but I tweeted yesterday about how Meghan and Harry said someone in the royal family made racist comments about baby Archie's skin color. And I just said that they should name who said it. Like, not in a negative way to, like, discredit them. I wasn't like, you know, oh my God, you're lying, I don't believe you, like, you need to name them. Like, it wasn't even in that context at all. Like, I'm not a Meghan hater. I don't even like the royals, FYI. Like, I don't like the royals, and I'm neutral on Harry and Meghan, and I don't really follow them. I don't really care about them that much. I just thought that the Oprah interview looked really juicy because I saw some of the previews, and I was like, oh wow, like, she's gonna spill some royal tea, like, I'm gonna tune in for that. But other than that, I don't follow them or fucking give a shit about them. I just said that because they made this comment about you know, that someone apparently said this stuff about baby Archie, that's so inflammatory to put it out there, and like, you should just name names and everything so the public can have the full story. Like, that's it. Let me just read out these tweets that had everyone calling me a racist. So I tweeted, I think this was as I was watching the interview. I don't think it's fair for Harry not to share the details of the conversation about Archie's skin. It's such a bombshell and inflammatory that if they're going to reveal it publicly, they need to share the specifics, name, details, context, everything. So that was the first tweet. So I didn't even mention Meghan. I said Harry because Oprah was asking Harry a lot, like, she sort of tried to grill him a little bit on it, and then he was just like, I'm not saying it. And then someone responded to me. They said, I think it's William or... Wait, hang on. Someone responded to me, and they said, I think it's William and Charles, and to blow that up would be effectively to end their relationship permanently, and those are the only two people he consistently won't go into details about. Then I responded to this person, which they screenshotted my original tweet and my response. So I responded, then why mention if you're not going to give more details? Now everybody is guessing who, bringing up so many names. If they're being racist, we should know. We should also know if it was out of context, like the conservative press could be racist to the baby, you know? Question mark. So that's all I said. I never said that they made it up. I'm just saying that, like, it's such a big thing. Like, just give the public the full comment and like context and the names of who said it. Like, I just want all the details. And I thought we were all about accountability now. Isn't that what we're doing? Like, that's what these people always say. Like, they're always like, you know, we're holding you accountable for your racism and your sexism and your bigotry, blah, blah, blah. So there's someone like high up in the royal family with that much influence and that much power, and they're like a racist. Like, don't you want that exposed? Like, don't you want them to be held accountable? Like, I fucking cannot keep up with these SJWs. They'll be like, you know, people need to be accountable for their actions. So I'm like, well, okay, well, Meghan and Harry, can you like name who's racist? And they're like, no, they don't have to tell you. Like, what are these rules? Like, you guys just make up the rules as you go along. Like, one minute it's like, hold this person accountable. Now it's like, they don't have to call out the racist. Just, it's just so fucking annoying. It's such a mind fuck. And like, I don't even have a dog in this fight, really. Like, I'm not team Meghan. I'm not anti Meghan. But now, because I said that, you know, Harry and Meghan should give us the full story about the Archie comments, it's like, I feel like I'm, you know, being framed as some like racist Piers Morgan type who like, you know, defends the royals to the end and, you know, hates Meghan. Like, I don't care. And I don't mean to overreact to this, because it was only like a handful of trolls on Twitter that I blocked that said it. You know, they're the same accounts that just tweet about people being racist all day. Like, they say about everyone. So it's, you know, it's not the end of the world, and it doesn't hurt my feelings, because, you know, I know what I meant and I know what I said. But when I see it, even just like the tiny scale of that, then it puts it in my head, and I start thinking about like my podcast as a whole, and I imagine, you know, it snowballing and how people can look into what I say in just like such a negative way. Like, these kind of people, they're obviously going to take everything I say in the worst faith possible, because it's like these people are looking through, like one of them said like, oh yeah, I got it on my burner account because someone sent me this screenshot. They're like, I went through his account on my burner account or something. It's like, well, like, if you're looking through my account randomly through my like replies to people, and you're looking at it already with it in your mind that I'm like a certain type of way, like, you're going to see everything that I put out there in that way, because you already decided before you even looked at what I had written. And, you know, that's why I do just block people pretty quickly now on social media, because it's like, why would we even engage? Because you obviously, like, you already have a idea of like who I am or what I believe or something. So if we even try to talk about it, I'm not going to get anywhere. Like, I could clarify and go, oh no, I didn't mean that. And you're just going to be like, fuck you. You know, so there's like no point. It's crazy too, because I'm just like my podcast is small. Like, I haven't even been around that long. I'm like a nobody, and I'm a nobody that has slightly contrarian opinions on very superficial pop culture topics, and then I still get attacked with this shit. And it makes me think like how much stuff like actually people that are relevant must cop. Like, they must deal with so much when they're actually on a level of being really successful and they don't fit exactly into the box. They must just cop this stuff so bad. And again, like, I know it's not that much of a deal. It's on like a small scale, but now I'm in my head about the episode. And I'm thinking about like, you know, oh God, could this line be, can they chop this line out? And then it makes me sound, you know, this certain way, especially if they're listening to it in their mind that I'm already have a thing. And people are so heated around this Meghan and royal stuff. Like, people are so deeply invested in it. Like, I don't care. I've never watched The Crown. Like, it's not that deep to me. And, you know, because I did record the whole thing from fresh from watching it, like, my take was fairly neutral in my opinion. Like, you'll hear the segment when I put it out. I was just kind of like a bit both sides about it. Cause like, I think Meghan's kind of shady. I think the royals are shit. And it's just, that's like about it. And I was kind of cavalier about it, cause I don't care that much. I just was like, oh, this looks like you know, it's juicy and there'll be some drama in this interview, I'll check it out. And now that it's a day later and I've seen how intense it's all gotten on social media around Megan, it's just made me nervous now about even saying one thing about her. It's way too intense. I can see why a lot of people who are kind of politically incorrect end up going over into like a more conservative right-wing space. Like, obviously I'm not going to do that. Like, it's not me, and I would never fake my beliefs for clout. Like, even though you can make a lot of money doing that, when I had Blair White on, we sort of trashed Candace Owens and we basically said that we think she's doing that and some other people are doing that, and you can do it and you can make a lot of money doing it. I would never do it, but I can see how there are some people and they just maybe they come out into the mainstream and they have some opinions or some takes that aren't, you know, totally PC or totally in the box. And then, you know, they get called like homophobic, racist, like, you know, this and that. And they probably just think like, oh, fuck it, I'm just going to go work at the Daily Wire or make a conservative YouTube channel and I'll just play to that crowd. And because there's no point me even being in the mainstream discourse if this is the reaction I'm going to get. So I can kind of see how people can get like driven over to that, because you just get like forced out. It's like, well, where else am I going to go? This is also why I like podcasting so much better than Twitter, by the way, because I haven't had any negative feedback really since I started this podcast, which has amazed me, because it's kind of like every week I'm expecting to have like people hate me and sending me abusive messages and stuff. And it's really been such a very tiny percentage of like any negativity, like really anything bad that I've had. Like, the only bad reviews I've had are from people who like obviously don't even listen to the podcast and they've been a fan of someone that I've dragged, so you know they hate me over that. And I have all of these like woke this word of the day, woke. I feel so cringy saying woke all the time, but pops up a lot in this episode. But I do have a lot of these like woke listeners in my DMs and stuff all the time, and they're like, oh, I love your episode, I love your take on this. Or some of them will be like, oh, well, I didn't agree with you on that, but like I get where you're coming from, because it's like, well, you listen to me regularly, so you get my humor and you know where I'm coming from and what I'm about, and you have kind of more of an idea of what my values are. And, you know, later in the episode, I have a story about falling out with a friend over Bernie Sanders, with me being the Bernie guy that loves Bernie. So it's like, you get it, and I don't get the backlash. But then when it's like on Twitter, it's just like a bunch of like housewives troll accounts that I blocked that just tweet that I'm racist and try to, you know, like I said, look at things in a negative light. Like the Megan tweet I read before, like, wasn't even bad, but people automatically like saw it in the worst possible light that they could. I would actually delete my Twitter if I didn't need it to communicate with certain celebs and stuff that follow me, because I just feel like with my podcast and the Instagram account that I have, Unpopular JP, if you want to follow it, and the Clubhouse app now that I'm getting into, and I've been meaning to do a segment about Clubhouse on this podcast and I keep pushing it back. But with all of those things, I feel like I don't even really need Twitter now. Like, I get news on there, but I'm like more restrained with my opinions, I feel like, on Twitter, because it's just a landmine. It's so toxic. And then I'm able to express myself so much more freely on the podcast, which I love. Anyway, I just had to get that off my chest, because now I'm in my head about this episode and it's making me scared to talk about Meghan Markle, and I'm just imagining the stands coming for me, but whatever, had to get that out. I'm not going to censor myself. And by the way, this is why your positive reviews help me a lot, because when I do have people saying things on Twitter, even if it's like two people or something, or like two bad tweets, like, it does get in your head to a certain extent. And like, you guys actually, when you take the time to leave me a positive review, it just helps so much. All right, so let's get on with the show, because there's so much to talk about. Remember, the Bravo and Bachelor stuff I'm doing kind of at the start. Meghan and Harry's in the middle, and then the Chris Cuomo stuff is at the end if you want to skip that.
Welcome to our Patreon, everyone. This is what we like to call the good, the bad, the baby.
So we created this thing called Good, the Bad, the Baby. Kind of a little spinoff from my Instagram handle. And you're basically just going to hear about and watch about us trying to be freaking parents.
For the first time.
For our first time.
All right, let's catch up on some of the latest Bravo stuff. Let's get into some Bravo news. Let's get into a few little mini recaps. So Stassi from Vanderpump Rules has officially returned to podcasting after being cancelled last year. I thought she would have restarted her Straight Up with Stassi podcast because it was so popular. She was actually one of the few popular Bravo celebrity like podcasters. I think it's really like her, Hannah Burner, Brandy Glanville maybe, and like Heather Dubrow. I can't really think of any other Bravo podcasts that are actually popular, but I thought she was going to restart that, but she hasn't. She probably didn't even own it looking back. I'm sure she probably just had like a deal with a podcast network and they probably canned the entire thing when she had her controversy. So she probably couldn't even restart that one if she wanted to. So instead she has done a Patreon only podcast with Bo, and it's about them being parents, which sounds pretty painful. I think firing Stassi and Jax and Kristen and the whole gang has probably ruined Vanderpump Rules, which is a shame, but the good thing is that there's no more Bo, because I could not deal with his thirsty ass playing up to the cameras every episode, and he would probably be even worse on a podcast. But look, good for them. People hate Stassi, but she does have a huge fan base, and I think she'll probably make some money off Patreon, because I feel like the people that like Stassi, they like really, really love her. Like, they're super invested in her and want to know all about her life, and they would probably be in heaven paying, I think it's like $12 a month or something, which is quite expensive, but they'll probably be in heaven coughing that up to listen to Stassi and Bo talk about their baby. At first, I thought it was like a bad idea not to do a free public podcast, because she's missing out on a lot of publicity that she could have gotten from it and a bigger, wider audience and all of that. But I think that putting it behind a Patreon is actually the smarter thing to do, so the haters can't dissect everything that she says. Because the fact is, like I said, like, people love her, but people also really hate her. And 100% there would be a bunch of like Bravo fans listening to every single episode, just waiting to take something out of context and cancel her again, or maybe find something that like genuinely bad she said. I don't know, but whether she said something bad or she didn't say something bad, people would be listening, like trying to put something together to like get rid of her again. So good for her hiding behind the paywall. I'm sure she'll make some money from it. And yeah, they're fine. I'm interested to see what happens to the rest of the cast, actually, because Bo and Stassi, they have all their Instagram followers. They have like, I'm sure they're going to be back on TV and like doing some stuff. Like, I don't think that their career's over, but yeah, I do want to see what happens to the rest of the people that aren't on the show anymore. I've tried to get Kristen on the podcast before because I love her, but I think she's a bit scared to do my show, to be honest. I hope I can convince her at some point, because she is one of my Bravo faves, and I've met her and interviewed her before back in the day, and she was really, really nice. And all of the PR people and stuff that had worked with her during her publicity tour here in Australia had like the nicest things to say about her. I just really like her. Anyway, let me get into Below Deck Sailing Yacht, because that's the latest Below Deck spin-off. It just premiered. It's so fucking good. I love it. I just started, so you can get on board now. It's only season two, but you don't have to watch season one. The entire cast is different. Season one was just like a starter season, so I feel like this is kind of like the real official beginning of this show. I was actually meant to have Elizabeth on from the regular Below Deck to come on and like do a bit of a recap with me and a bit of an interview, but she was at a yoga retreat, so she couldn't do it, which is fine because I can still talk about it by myself. So look, this show is just like the regular Below Deck, but it's a smaller boat and bigger personalities. I think of it like Vanderpump Rules on a boat. The cast are young, they're wild. Some of them look like they aren't even that experienced in yachting, and they've just been hired for their looks and personality, which obviously that has always played a part in casting Below Deck characters, but most of them are like quite experienced that you see on the show, at least from the bits and pieces that I've seen. But this one has like, it's got this Australian girl, Ali. She's a stewardess, and she's never worked interior before ever. Like, she mentions that she just did an online course before filming. So I guess they just really wanted her, and they're like, look, just jump online and do this course and you can do interior. And there's some other girl named Sydney. She's never even worked on a yacht before, but she grew up on a sailing boat or something because her parents lived on one. So she's on there. There's also this guy, Jean-Luc. He only has 1 year experience, but I can see why they wanted to hire him, because he's 6'9" and he's so hot. He's just gorgeous. Everyone on board wants to bang him. including the guests, including me watching at home. And he's like too tall to fit into the bunk beds on the boat, which has to be torture. They keep showing footage of him tossing and turning in his like cabin, because I think they said that the bed is like 79 inches or something. And actually, I'm not good with me. I don't know, whatever. He's way too fucking big for the bed, okay? The first charter guests were a mess as well. They were rich white trash from Newport Beach. They were covered in tattoos. They looked like they owned a West Coast Choppers store, and they got so shit-faced and made fools of themselves, which we love to see on Below Deck. And they were into sailing, and they kept demanding to go sailing. And I didn't even realize that sailing is a thing. Like, I thought if the boat's in the water and it's moving, then it's sailing. But apparently it's an actual, like, specific activity or something. So, yeah, get into Below Deck sailing. This is going to be explosive season. I have a little insider info about the season, actually. And apparently it's, like, just very explosive, and things that have never happened in Below Deck history before happen on this season, and it just looks amazing. They actually played like a bit of a super teaser at the end of the premiere, and it looked wild. Like, it had like girl on girl action and screaming and hooking up, and like I said, it's just like regular Below Deck, but like bigger and badder. So get into it.
I want to box this up and wrap this up.
Check. You got it.
Are they going to be separate or together tonight?
We're going to split it. I don't split a check, so it's either one card or the
good.
Other.
It's okay.
I would like to box this up.
Yeah. My friends and I, we split bills, and I can box it up as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Broke bitches split checks, okay? I'm not going to sit here and calculate how much tax I owe on a check.
As far as the Real Housewives of New Jersey and Atlanta go, there's actually not a lot to report on this week. If we're not talking about Strippergate on Atlanta or Evan cheating on Jackie on Jersey, there's just not, like, a whole lot to say. With Jersey, as I keep saying, you know, with this whole cheating scandal, there's no way to defend Teresa, in my opinion, and I continue to see it on social media, which kind of drives me a little bit crazy. I think it's so gross because she's so obviously in the wrong, and the excuses that people are making for her, it almost, like, turns me off the show a bit, I'm not going to lie. And I'm not even someone that has an issue with Teresa stans usually. Like, I know they have this reputation on, like, Twitter as the crazy tree huggers. I've never really had an issue with them until now. Like, now I see it, I'm like, okay, now I know why people don't like the Teresa fans. The latest with this whole scandal on the show is that apparently Margaret knew about the cheating, which makes us think that, like, the cheating actually could be true. And people are trying to use that now to, like, justify that Teresa was right all along. And it's like, it doesn't matter if Teresa was right or wrong. Like, it doesn't matter if Evan really cheated on Jackie. It's the way that Teresa went about it, by spreading it to everybody during Evan's birthday party. It was so cruel and callous. And then on top of that, just to have the complete lack of accountability, which is a pattern with Teresa that's gone back to the beginning of the show. So that's what the issue is. It's not whether Evan's really cheating on Jackie or not. And of course, there's hypocrisy as well thrown in there with Teresa, because as the producers keep playing, they keep flashing back and playing clips of when Teresa would freak out anytime anybody mentioned Joe cheating on her. So again, there's just like so many levels to why Teresa is completely in the wrong and why we're all so annoyed with her. It's exhausting. And you know what? I'm already starting to see Jackie in interviews, like, open the door to, you know, reconciling with Teresa, because obviously they have to make up with her to stay on the show. And that's just kind of ruining the show for me. Like, I am going to keep watching for now because it is a good season, but I don't know if I can sit through Teresa completely wriggling out of another thing where any other housewife would have been completely destroyed for it. As for Atlanta, there's not a lot going on except for two things that I want to talk about this week. One, Candy and Kenya did a YouTube video where they said that Porsha was complaining about Candy's Black Lives Matter activism being featured on the show. Obviously, the motivation would be from Porsha's end is that, like, she wanted the social justice storyline all to herself because it's, you know, it's a good look for her. It's given her a lot of very positive press and coverage. And she didn't want to share the limelight. And apparently she was actually confronted about it on camera too, but none of it made it into the final edit. But that would explain why there has been tension between Kenya and Porsha on the show, because I feel like for some fans it kind of came out of left field because people thought that Porsha and Kenya had actually made up, and they haven't if you're watching the season. So that explains it a little more. Guys, didn't I tell you this back in early January? Portia is the shadiest and most conniving person on Bravo. I went into this in one of my episodes when, like, the whispers of all of this were coming out, and Kenya said a few things on social media. I said I was Team Kenya, and I explained why, and I'm glad I did, because looking at it now, it's like it's all the receipts are coming out. It sounds like Candy and Kenya are going to bring it up at the reunion too, so hopefully they air it, because I would like more of the real Portia to be exposed. But you know what? I actually would not be surprised if all of this got cut out of the show, because Bravo has gone all in on Portia, and they really have been behind her, and they've really elevated her social justice stuff, which is great, by the way, because it's great for the cause and everything. But I just feel like bringing in this part of the storyline with Kenya and then possibly Candy as well, like questioning some of the motivation and, you know, Portia not doing it completely for altruistic reasons. It just, I don't know. It's not a good look for Portia. It's maybe not a good look for Bravo. People are very invested. It's like such a sensitive topic. So they might just cut it all out. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with that one. The other thing I wanted to mention on Atlanta was that Kenya and Drew sat down for dinner. They had a fight. And then when they were done, Drew tried to split the check, and Kenya called her out in her confessional and said she was a broke bitch, which I agree with. If you're trying to split a check, like, splitting the check at dinner is for college students. You don't do it when you're a grown adult and, like, working a full-time job and all of that. I know that people exaggerate their wealth to get on Housewives, but nobody's so broke on this show that they can't pick up a check at dinner. It wasn't even a fancy restaurant. They had some salad and crab cakes and, like, a drink. It wasn't like they went to some five-star restaurant and were getting, you know, lobster and 10 cocktails and stuff. Like, it was just a normal quick meal that you would have when you go out. I was shocked to see Drew insisting on splitting the check and to do it on camera without the self-awareness of how it, like, how cheap it makes you look. Like, they have way more money than me, and I pick up the check a lot. My rule is that you just take it in turns with friends. Like, I'll get dinner this time, you get it next time. Obviously, if it's like a group of people and not just, you know, a one-on-one with like two people out. If it's a big group or something, then everyone should just like chuck in and just split it evenly. Like, don't be getting out the calculator, just, you know, all chuck in $25 and call it even. Now, obviously, this only applies to like grown working people. I'm not telling, like, you know, if you're like struggling and you haven't got the stimulus check and you lost your job from COVID or whatever, and it's just the struggle is real. I'm not saying that you should be like picking up the check and going out for dinner with friends and stuff. Of course not. Like, clearly if you're a student or an intern or like at a minimum wage job or whatever, you can like split the bill. Totally fine. I've been poor as fuck before. Like, I moved out of home at 16 and sometimes I couldn't even afford more than instant noodles. So I get what it's like to be struggling and not be able to buy like your own meal, let alone someone else's. But yeah, the whole check splitting thing, I was shocked. It was the most shocking thing I've seen since the Strippergate episode, like all season. And, you know, if a friend obviously earns significantly more than the other person, then I do think that the wealthier one should pay more often. Like, not every time. I'm not saying that the bigger earner has to be like shouting everyone like constantly. Of course not. But if you're on like 100K or something and your friend is doing an entry-level part-time retail job while they are studying or something, like, pick up the check more often than not, all right? You can also decide, I think, by like who has traveled more. So, for example, if you're like your friend came to visit you and they had to get like public transport or get a taxi or something, then just be like, oh, I'll get dinner because, you know, you came out to see me. Something like that, you know, you just work it out like adults. It's kind of natural. I don't really think it's something you have to like think about too much. It should just come to you naturally of just like knowing what the situation is and what status yourself is and your friend is at. But yeah, if you're a grown adult working a decent job and you're still splitting lunch, like, that is just so cheap. It's really bad manners. I mean, maybe I'm old fashioned, but I've even picked up the bill before when I haven't had that much money, like, just to be polite. And I probably wouldn't go on a second date with a guy if he made me split the bill. Like, either I'll pay or you pay, but we're not fucking splitting it. Like, not at this point. And I always get disappointed if I have to pay on the first date, I'll be honest. Like, internally, like, I will reach for the check for sure, but I'm always hoping that like they'll go for it first, or you know, they'll insist and they'll be like, no, I'll get it, it's fine. Like, I don't sit there like waiting for them to do it. Like, I'm proactive about reaching for it, but it's like deep down, like, I want them to get it first if we're on a date. But I don't know, I was shocked by it. I had the same reaction Kenya did, but the rest of the episode, nothing really moved me. That was the only scene that I was really like, oh, everything else was just like, you know, whatever. So until next week.
Are you yelling?
I've stood up for you for months and months and months, defending you to people.
You're acting like everyone has been...
Yes, everyone has so much shit against you, Hannah.
Do my best to stay out of it.
And then for you to look there and acting like I'm out to get you.
You threw a drink at me, bitch!
Oh, I almost forgot to cover Summer House. How can I forget Summer House? Because last episode was incredible for many different reasons. On a sad note, Carl, he's the handsome guy. He's really tall. He's kind of the main dude on the show along with Kyle. His brother died from a drug overdose and it was really heartbreaking to watch. He got the news while they were filming, so we really saw his reaction in like real time and how he dealt with it and how the other cast members like rallied around him to support him. It's always really powerful when reality TV can capture something like that, because I think we're so used to staged antics and petty drama that when some like real shit happens, it just has a huge impact on you as a viewer. Not that there wasn't petty drama on the episode, because there was a lot. My girl Lindsay destroyed her relationship for good with that guy she was dating. I don't even know his name, to be honest, but they've been fighting all season, so we all saw this coming. This episode was her birthday. He tried to do something special for her. He set up this like dinky little dinner date thing by the pool for her, and she picked a fight with him and then she lost her shit, as she tends to do, and he packed up his stuff and left. The other week, I defended her irrational mood swings because I said that I could relate to her, but you know what? I really think she was in the wrong with this one. It just was not the time or the place, but I think they were addressing, you know, issues in their relationship that had been lingering anyway. So it was like, well, it was going to fucking come out at some point. So it's done with now. She was also wearing one of the most revealing dresses I've ever seen in my life when she was screaming at this guy. Like, she looked great, but I thought one of her titties was going to pop out. Like, Jesus Christ, what is going to fall out of Lindsay's dress? Like, I could see anything at any moment. Also bringing the drama is Hannah Burner. She's like Hurricane Hannah this season. Every episode, just hot mess, tears, screaming, drama. I love it. She's feuding with Amanda and Kyle, and even her BFF, her Giggly Squad BFF Paige, is like on Amanda's side. So Hannah's definitely in the wrong with this, and I don't care because I'm just enjoying watching it. She's giving the whole house a storyline this season. I really don't think she's putting it on either. I thought maybe for a while that she'd been like faking drama. Now I think she's just a naturally dramatic person. I've met people in real life that have similar personalities, and if you put them on a show, they would just make everything about themselves and pick fights with everybody. Like, some people are just like that, and I think Hannah is one of those people. So I'm a fan of it. I love all of the drama that she's bringing. I think she's like really making the show in some ways. They would not have as much going on if Hannah was not there. By the way, I may have gotten to the bottom of this whole Luke storyline. So remember when we were all trying to figure out if Hannah had been like faking how upset she was with Luke and it was just for the show and that she'd had a boyfriend the whole time because she's actually officially engaged now? Well, a listener wrote me and they kind of had some of the timeline down. So let me just read out the message. Here's my thoughts on Hannah Burner. So my understanding was that when Summer House filming wrapped in 2019, Hannah and Luke were still speaking through the fall and the winter seasons. This is when he kind of led her on and where the relationship gets messy. They had some falling out at a 2020 New Year's party, and just as COVID hit, Hannah met her now boyfriend. Their relationship moved very quickly, but then Hannah had to quarantine for filming of the 2020 season. She talks about this in her podcast a while back, that she expressed to her boyfriend that she'll be filming with Luke and that he has nothing to worry about with them living together for the summer. I don't recall Hannah saying that her and Luke were talking during quarantine as more than friends because she was clearly in a new relationship. If this is true, then it lines up completely with how the season's playing out. So there you have it. To be honest, I'm still a little bit confused, but I don't think that Hannah like has faked the entire storyline like I was sort of suspecting at one point. I thought, oh no, is this whole thing just bullshit? Like, maybe some stuff was exaggerated for the cameras, but I don't think it was all fake. So, I mean, it kind of solves that. One last thing about Summer House. There's this new girl, Sierra, on there. She's like a model slash nurse. She's gorgeous. She's like too good for this show. She is so level-headed. She's like stunning. Like when she's, I mean, even when she's not done up, she's stunning. But when she's like done up, it's like, wow. Like she is just so rational. She's so intelligent. She has a really great take on everything. Like I'm watching her and I'm like, girl, why are you even on Summer House? Like you're too good for this show. But I don't know. Like I hope that more happens with her because she doesn't have that much of a storyline. Like I do think that they kind of brought her in for diversity because they've been doing a lot of that across Bravo now because they've finally, you know, listened to viewers because viewers have been going like, why are you not putting diversity on these shows at all? So they're bringing in new people. Like I know they're doing it with New York now, obviously Summer House, Housewives of Dallas with Tiffany Moon. So it's great, but I hope that she can get like more storyline and more airtime and stuff because she's really likable and I think she's a really good addition and there's like a lot of potential there for her if she can like get a bit more going. So I hope they bring her back next year because sometimes if you don't have like a, you know, a big storyline and you just come into a show, you can kind of fade away and they don't bring you back. But I think she's going to have a lot to offer and I hope that we see her just doing some more stuff in the Bravo world because I really, really like her.
First, I want to say, I know this was not surprising to me. I know that I have said highly problematic, highly hurtful things in the past. I am incredibly aware of that. How do you think I got to doing the work that I do today?
All right, let's get into the latest on the Bachelor racism scandal because it's still going. I swear to God, every few days something new happens regarding all of this Bachelor fallout and I'm loving it. I think that it's more entertaining than the actual show. And I was starting to regret that I had stopped watching The Bachelor after Victoria left. I was thinking, God, have I like missed some like juicy stuff? But this is actually entertaining me enough. Like this is some good content. So, you know that Taylor Nolan girl, she is the crazy social justice warrior that I talked about last episode. She tried to cancel Chris Harrison only to have her own horrendous tweets resurface, like the worst tweets ever. Well, she's a licensed mental health counselor and all of these woke Bachelor stans now have reported her tweets to Washington's Department of Health and now they're formally assessing the complaints and they may open an investigation into her. Like what the fuck? Like, first of all, I can't believe that we've actually reached a point where the government can investigate you for tweets. Like, unless you're literally planning a terrorist attack on Twitter, I feel like the government should not be looking at your 10-year-old tweets and, like, social media posts. It's actually kind of scary. It reminds me of China's social credit system. But look, am I thoroughly amused by Taylor Nolan getting a taste of her own medicine? Of course, I'm living for this. Like, when I saw the headline on Page Six, like, fucking Department of Health investigating Taylor Nolan, I died. But, you know, this is the ultimate case of you reap what you sow, and her tweets were really fucking bad. Like, I don't know if I would want to go and see some, like, mental health professional that had those tweets, especially with her type of like mental health counseling. I follow this guy and I mostly follow him because he's really cute. Some like Brooklyn mental health counselor and like he's very woke and he's like a male Taylor Nolan. And if I was going to see him and I found out that he had like old tweets like this, I think I would stop going. You know, I was actually going through some of Taylor Nolan's just like social media posts, not trying to find anything problematic. I was just like looking at pictures of her and it's interesting how much she's changed her image over the years. Like when she was on The Bachelor, she had straight hair and just really sort of like glamorous makeup and I guess she kind of just looked more like your typical Bachelor contestant. And then if you look at her Instagram now, she has like her hair's all natural and curly and she barely wears any makeup, like very natural, very makeup free. And all of her photos are like next to potted plants or she'll wear a t-shirt that just says, you know, depression or like feminism or whatever. Her posts now are kind of like, it's a mixture of pictures of her crying with captions about mental health, and then there'll be some posts about white supremacy, and then that's all mixed in with, like, sponsored pictures of her in her underwear selling dildos and influencer body scrubs. They love doing that. They sell the dildos and the sex toys, but it's always framed as it's like, you know, female empowerment, like take control of your sexuality. It's like, girl, you're just flogging dildos for like money. And anyway, like I look at her change and how much she changed, and I do think like, is this like a bit of an act you've been putting on? But look, I'm going to be fair about this. I'm sure she has changed, as we all do over time. And in one of the apologies that she put out, one of the many apologies she put out for her bad tweets, she said that being biracial, she'd spent a lot of her life trying to be white before. And then she said that her tweets were the result of, and I quote, the whiteness around her. And now she embraces her blackness. She kept saying that her racist tweets were white people's fault, which I loved. It was like, girl, these tweets are you. Like, don't be blaming me or anyone else for your fucking tweets. But, you know, I am sure that she has gone through this, like the change. I know that it is difficult for people that are biracial. Like if you're a Mariah Carey fan, she talks about it a lot. Like for as long as I can remember, Mariah has talked about being biracial, and a lot of them feel like it's tough because they have like one side of people going, well, you have to be white. And then they have another side of people going, no, you've got to be black. And then they are trying to figure out where they are. And, you know, I look at Taylor Nolan stuff, and to me, it just sounds like she still needs to figure out who she is. Like, first, she's the Regina George white girl who bullies all the minorities at school, and, you know, she pushes the kid in the wheelchair down a hill. And now she's switched roles in the last few years, and she's sort of like become the bullied brown girl who's enacting revenge on the prom queen. She's kind of like a woke biracial Carrie or something. It's actually quite sad. Like, she seems to have a very underdeveloped sense of self and doesn't really have a clue who she is. And that's probably the subconscious reason why she actually went on The Bachelor in the first place. She was lost. She didn't know who she is. She thought that fame might bring some meaning to her life. I mean, I don't know if it did, judging by the mess that she's in now. Now that she's been cancelled and run off the internet, I hope she uses this time wisely to just discover herself, away from the spotlight, away from the trolls. Taylor, take some self-care time, but like some real self-care. I don't mean just like sitting at home with the face mask reading White Fragility. Like, do some real work and figure out who you are. Maybe she can apply one of her mental health courses to herself. She can just talk to herself in the mirror for a while.
I am saddened and shocked at how insensitive I was in that interview with Rachel Lindsay. And I didn't speak from my heart. And that is to say, I stand against all forms of racism. And I am deeply sorry. I'm sorry to Rachel Lindsay. And I'm sorry to the black community.
All right, let's get to Chris Harrison. Chris Harrison, good old boy Chris, is back. He sat down on Good Morning America for, I guess, his like first official apology interview with Michael Strahan. Michael Strahan's so hot, by the way. He's like really friendly and cute, but he's about like 7 foot tall or something. We love it. It's like the best of both worlds. Like a big man with like a nice personality. We love that. This interview cracked me up, honestly. I'm not outraged by this scandal or anything. Like, I just think it's kind of dumb and overblown. But like I've been saying, I do think he'd kind of, like, I can see where he went wrong with the Rachel Lindsay interview, so he did deserve some backlash. That's why I'm not, like, that upset over all of this. I'd only be mad if he got, like, officially fired from The Bachelor, because that would be cancel culture, in my opinion. But he said in this interview that he's coming back to the show, so whatever, it is what it is. I'm not going to turn into some boomer that's, like, mad at Dr. Seuss. I didn't even look into that, by the way. I just saw headlines about people upset over Dr. Seuss and Dr. Seuss is racist or something. I don't even care to read up on it. Dr. Seuss probably is racist. So this Chris Harrison interview was pretty funny. Michael Strahan was not a fan of his at all. He was like, following the racism controversy, I sat down with Chris Harrison to find out what was behind his contentious remarks. And then Michael just hammered Chris for a few minutes, and Chris gave these really generic rehearsed answers about how he's like learning from his bad behavior and it was unacceptable, and it was just a lot of stuff. Like, someone on YouTube commented, I copied and pasted this. They commented, It doesn't even look like he's answering Michael's questions. It looked like they taped Chris saying something and then played it along with Michael's questions, which is spot on. Like, Michael would ask something and then Chris would just give this, like, very sterile, generic answer that, you know, white people give when they get in trouble. Michael also blamed Chris for Rachel Lindsay being, quote, bullied offline by racists and having to delete her Instagram account. Like, you already know how I feel about that from last week, so I won't get into that one again, but Michael Strahan was definitely tough on Chris. And, you know, at the end, like, when it was finished and Michael was kind of giving his post-interview commentary, he basically just said that, like, Chris Harrison sounded superficial and is trying to stay on Bachelor, which is true. Michael didn't lie. It was just very surface level, and he is just trying to stay on The Bachelor. So, yeah, it would just be great if TV journalists were, like, this adversarial to, like, racist politicians and, you know, like, powerful people that enact structural racism with, like, policies and laws instead of saving all their rage for, like, the guy that hosts The Bachelor. After watching Chris Harrison, I actually started searching up Good Morning America interviews with, like, racist politicians and stuff, and most of them were, like, friendly puff pieces with no pushback. Like, damn, GMA, like, you think Chris Harrison's microaggressions are bad? Just wait until you hear about the crime bill. Your wig will fly off. Anyway, Chris said he's working with a race educator and strategist and black faith leaders to, like, learn about oppression and stuff. I don't know what a race educator and strategist is, but I'm sure it pays well. There's a lot of guilty white Americans out there that are just, like, you know, ready to hand over their paycheck to someone to call them racist. So good for them. Get that money. Must be such a lucrative business. Like, you just throw together a PowerPoint presentation titled, you know, Unlearning Racial Bias in the Workplace, and then you sell it to Nestle, and then they'll make all their employees watch it while they use child labor in African plantations and poison the water wells in Pakistan. So get that money. You just know that Chris Harrison must hate having to do all these these racial re-education training courses. Like, your personality doesn't change. I mean, how old is he? Like 60 or something? Your personality doesn't suddenly change from slamming the woke police 3 weeks ago to suddenly consulting with a race strategist about microaggressions. ABC would have been like, bitch, if you were to keep your job, you will work with our overpriced corporate race consultants and you will like it. It'll be like me coming on the podcast next week and going, you guys, you know what? I realized how problematic it was for me to defend the Real Housewives of Orange County. I now know that I was upholding white supremacy, and I'm committed to unlearning my inherent bias with the help of this online course that costs $750 per chapter. I mean, it's not like Chris Harrison's going to say no. Like, who wouldn't want to host The Bachelor? It probably pays millions of dollars every year. It's pretty easy. It's, like, fun. You get to be super famous. You get to hang out with, like, hot Bachelor people. And he's been doing it for so long, it's probably the easiest gig in the world for the amount of money he gets. Anyway, Chris Harrison is staying on The Bachelor franchise, apparently. And I even saw that Rachel Lindsay accepted his apology and she wants to move forward now. She was probably sick of people calling her an Islamophobe. So now she's like, you know what, guys, we just all need to move forward and get over this. All of a sudden, good timing there, Rachel. I'm just looking forward to Paradise and The Bachelorette. I feel like they want to go with the white lead like Katie, but, like, they don't want to look racist, so they're trying to figure out how to do it. It'll be like, welcome your new Bachelorette vibrator Katie, who will pick her suitor from our most diverse batch of singles yet. And then it'll be like the three white guys on the season will get most of the airtime. Oh, this show is a mess.
You say the narrative with Kate, it didn't happen. Mm. So specifically, did you make Kate cry?
No.
So where did that come from? Was there a situation where she might have cried or she could have cried?
No, the reverse happened.
You knew all along, and people around you knew that that wasn't true.
Everyone in the institution knew it wasn't true.
So why didn't somebody just say that?
It's a good question.
So Meghan Markle did her big Oprah tell-all, and it was pretty amazing. It was definitely worth the wait. But before I get into that, let's just talk about these tweets from Bethany from The Real Housewives of New York. She had some negative things to say about Meghan, and everybody lost their fucking shit over it. I mean, specifically, Americans lost their shit, and I think the British public actually agreed with Bethany, which is hilarious. So, Bethany fired off a bunch of tweets about Meghan, like we all did. I think we were all on social media talking about Meghan over the last couple days, and It was quite funny because in these tweets, which I'm going to get into, she also plugged her like podcast, which showed me that she just knew what she was doing and she was kind of using all of the hype around this Megan Oprah interview to plug her podcast. So good for you, Bethany. You've always got a hustle going. So she said something originally about like, not since Monica Lewinsky have people been so obsessed with a young female interview, which I think is true. That's fine. And then she followed that up and she was like, "Cry me a river, the plight of being a game show host, fairly unknown actress, to suffering in a palace with tiaras and seven-figure weddings for 2 whole years, to being a household name with Oprah on speed dial, fetching $7 million for interviews, hundreds of millions in media deals." Which, I mean, that's fucking true. I mean, she didn't get to keep the $7 million from the Oprah interview, but yes, she has hundreds of millions of dollars in media deals and stuff. So Bethany said that, and then Bethany said, "I 100% give Harry a break. This isn't the way to generate less press and cannot be filed under the guise of wanting privacy to prevent a repeat of previous events. If you hate me for saying it here, don't listen to my podcast. # just be with Bethany. It's littered with my opinion." So, you know, good for you, Bethany, again, working in the podcast plug. Then Bethany had another tweet. She said, "I chose reality TV to work towards making money, to be scrutinized and criticized. I took the trappings and the beatings along with it. It's a rose with petals and thorns. People beg to enter the often toxic institution I signed up for. That was the life I chose. You can't play stupid and smart." People were pissed off, I guess, because it's a bit hypocritical, because Bethany's like whinged about her private life and lack of privacy and stuff too. So it's like, come on, Beth, you are criticizing Megan for things that you've kind of done before. And then it's also like, why does Harry get a pass? Because Harry's right there alongside Megan saying a lot of the same stuff. And Bethany's like, "I give Harry a pass, but I don't like Megan." So people flipped out and then they turned it into racism because everything's racist now. And they said that Bethany hates black women, because Bethany had like criticized WAP before. She said she didn't like WAP. So Bethany the racist. So they did all that. And then Bethany had to apologize. It was quite funny because Bethany did these tweets before the interview aired. And then in the actual interview, which I'm going to get into, there's a lot of stuff about like racism that Megan experienced from the press and stuff. So it didn't paint Bethany's tweets in the best light. So Bethany apologized, and you know what? She'll be fine. Like, Bethany is a superstar. She's sort of one of the few mainstream celebrities that gets away with not being PC and getting into controversies. And, you know, she dishes out all these hot takes and they blow over. And like I said, she knew what she was doing. I'm sure that her podcast is going to go up in downloads in Britain. So whatever, it's all good. Her podcast is kind of a flop now, by the way, so no wonder she had to do this. Like, when she first launched, her podcast went number one and she had such an ego about it. She was just bragging about, you know, "I just went straight to number one and everyone said it's so difficult. Now I'm up there with Hillary Clinton's podcast and blah, blah, blah." But the thing is that every new podcast pretty much goes to number one. Like, if you've already got a following, like a celebrity podcast, they always go number one, because the main thing that measures the podcast charts is actually the number of subscribers. Like, I think that's the biggest metric. It's not downloads. So they get a flurry of all new subscribers in one go and they shoot to the top. But then after that, their podcasts usually don't grow and they're like down the bottom. Like, Bethany's not even in the top 200 on the main charts. She's only on the sub charts. So yeah, no wonder she's promoting her podcast. Anyway, back to Megan. Look, I find it a little disturbing how invested people are in Megan from both sides. Like, the Megan haters in Britain, they need to calm down and call a fucking therapist, because it's not healthy to be this fixated and hate on someone this intensely. And the American sycophants that worship Megan need to get a life too, because it's just cringy and pathetic. I think that Americans tend to project a lot of their own shit and their own country's history onto Megan, and they kind of make Meghan Markle all about themselves in a way that Americans tend to do sometimes. And I think that's frustrating for English people, because there's certain nuances and history to the monarchy and just the royals in general that Americans like don't understand. So I think the British public get really annoyed seeing the Americans putting in their like 2 cents about the whole situation constantly. Well, not their 2 cents, just the way and how hard they go riding for Meghan and supporting Meghan. the way that they support Megan, it reminds me of like K-pop Twitter or like Stan Twitter, where people are obsessed with, you know, Ariana Grande or like BTS or something. Like, it really is on another level. And I think that it comes off to like British people. It's kind of like Americans are telling England how to run their country and their society. So I think that creates like some tension between the two sides. But I'm going to both sides this, because both sides in this Meghan Markle debacle are just so out of control. You know, the other day I was excited about this Oprah interview coming up, and I thought, you know what, I want to like get up to date on some of the latest Meghan and Harry juice, because I don't really follow their like, you know, day-to-day stuff. I just see like the big headlines is really all I pay attention to. So I wanted to know what's going on, and I jumped on YouTube to try and find some like, you know, recent videos of, you know, what's the tea. And first I came on some like morning news show in Britain, and it was like a whole panel of people analyzing Prince Harry on James Corden's show. And it was just so stupid. Like, I just wanted the broad strokes of what's going on. And these panelists are like picking Meghan and Harry apart to such an extreme degree that it's kind of sick. It's like, you know, Meghan exited the town car and then she looked to the right when she should have looked down, and I was appalled. It's like, girl, like, get a fucking life, like, relax, it's not that deep. And then I go on Twitter and I see the way the Americans kind of infantilize Meghan, and they hype her up like she's the most incredible woman that ever walked the face of the earth, and that's just embarrassing and cringy. So I watched this Oprah interview, and it was definitely worth the wait. Like I said, it was really well produced, and they just give you like all the good bits of the Meghan and Harry story in like quick bite-sized pieces. You know, it didn't drag on for like hours and hours, and all the questions were like really juicy because nothing was off the table. So Oprah asked all the questions that you wanted her to ask, and she had good follow-ups, and Meghan answered everything. So you know, they got into serious stuff like, you know, racism and mental health, which I'm going to get into in a minute. But there was also like just petty stuff that you would want to know, like Kate Middleton and Meghan having drama like in the palace over like bridesmaids dresses or something like that. And I'm like, oh, that's juicy. Like, I didn't realize that they had a feud, because a lot of the stuff that I see in the tabloids, I always assume it's just made up. So to know that they actually have drama, I'm like, oh. The other thing I noticed about this interview and Meghan specifically is like the whole thing was just very calculated. Like, Meghan tried to paint herself as being like so naive to the royals and the media, and like she didn't know what was going on, and like I did not buy it one bit. For example, at the start of the interview, she said that she had never Googled Harry. And I'm like, girl, please, like, even normal civilians will Google someone when you like start dating somebody. So if you're a fucking American and you're dating like Prince Harry, as if you're not going to be looking up royal stuff and looking up Harry to like find the tea. But she was just trying to paint like she's so pure, and she's like, oh, I just, you know, he told me everything, so I just believed everything he told me, and I didn't need to, you know, look him up. But it's like, girl, stop. Like, no one fucking believes that. And every answer she gave was so pre-planned and delivered in a way to craft this really specific narrative that she wants. Like, she obviously has worked with probably the best PR people in America, if not the world, to prepare for this interview. So she was on point. She was on her game. She knew what she was doing every step of the way. And that doesn't mean that what she said is dishonest at all. Like, I actually believed a lot of the things that she said and about the tough times that she had in the palace and all of that. But she's not this like naive deer in the headlights who just fell in love with the prince and she doesn't know anything that's going on. And oh my God, she's so innocent. She's like Bambi. Like, no, girl. Like, yeah, Meghan knows what she's doing. Like, I tend to believe the general narrative of her being calculated, ambitious, but I don't think that's all of her, but I think that's a part of her, and I do believe that for the most part. And watching this interview confirmed it all for me, because that's exactly what I saw watching this interview. She's very smart. Like, she absolutely knows everything that she's doing. She knows how she wants to be perceived moving forward, and I think that she has a game plan and a strategy for the next few years, and this interview is one part of that, and she's just sort of laying the foundations for, you know, bigger things to come. And it's not a bad thing at all. Like, She's been painted as manipulative by the British press for years now, and it's put in a negative light, but I don't really think it's negative. Like, for one, you're up against the royal machine, so it would be so stupid not to be, you know, cunning with the way that you're going about things. You're up against a massive institution, so you want to have all your ducks lined up. Like, you want to be prepared and kind of, like, ready for battle. So, you know, good for her. And at the end of the day, like, she and Prince Harry are happy. Like, Harry never fit into the royal box for as long as I can remember in the tabloids, because the royals are huge in Australia. Like, there's never a week when the royals aren't on the cover of, like, all of the supermarket tabloids here in Australia. And for as long as I can remember, like, Harry was the wild child party boy. I remember they would get pictures of him out in Vegas, and he'd always have, like, a different girl. And he did not fit into that lifestyle. And, even his dad didn't, because, you know, there's these rumors that you would have all heard this, that Harry isn't actually Charles's son because he looks like someone else that Diana apparently had an affair with. Like, no one knows if it's true, but, like, Charles never fit into the royal thing. Like, Charles never loved Diana. We all know that now. He was kind of forced into that marriage by, I don't know who forced him into it, but whatever. He was pushed into that marriage. He always loved Camilla Parker Bowles, and he had this affair with Camilla for decades. And then, you know, years after Diana's death, he and Camilla ended up getting married. And so, you know, he knows what it's like to be trapped in the whole thing. And Harry said in this interview that he did feel trapped. Like, he actually verbalized it. He admitted it. And he said that he didn't know how to get out until he met Meghan. So, like, good for them. Like, I love it. You know, they're doing their thing. He's breaking that cycle that others before him haven't been able to break, because the royals aren't clean. It's like, which is the one that got caught on Jeffrey Epstein's island with, like, Bill Clinton and everything? I think it was, like, Prince Andrew or something. Like, these aren't squeaky clean people. They're out there, like, wheeling and dealing and probably resent the life that they've been put into. I mean, not all of them. Some of them probably love it. Like, Prince William looks like he's into it, but a lot of them, I don't think that it's, like, really their jam. So good for Harry for getting out. And yeah, Meghan has her own agenda and she's ambitious and calculated, but I think she loves Harry too. So they ended up with the life that they both wanted, which, you know, is a great thing. And just because Meghan is a smooth operator and is cunning and knows how to kind of, like, have a come up, and this is the biggest come up of all, she still couldn't have prepared for everything that came her way with entering the royal family. Like, she would have had an idea of it, but I'm sure it's something that you just cannot understand until you're in it. So when she talked in the interview about, like, mental health struggles that she had and all of this stuff, like, I think that was true. Like, that would, being in that bubble, I think, would fuck with anybody. And look, obviously she chose to reveal some of this stuff because she knew it would put her in a sympathetic light for sure, but it doesn't mean that it didn't happen. Saying she weaponized her mental health is probably a bit harsh, but, you know, she knows what she's doing putting it out there, but it doesn't invalidate the authenticity of, you know, her experience either. She definitely did lay it on pretty thick during parts of the interview, though. Like, she had some line, I can't remember it verbatim, but it was like, you know, I was such a champion for women's voices, and then I was silenced, and, like, it was so rehearsed. Like, she really played, like, she loved that one. I could imagine her saying it in the mirror. Now, I want to get to the racism accusations, because that was a huge focus. Like, pretty much the second half of the interview was very focused on the racial aspect. So Harry and Meghan both basically said that the British press was racist to Meghan, and they indicated that some people within the royal family were too. The biggest bombshell was when they said that someone who they didn't name had made a comment while Meghan was pregnant with Archie that baby Archie's skin may have been too dark or something along those lines. This was messed up because when Oprah pressed them for details about this, they wouldn't say who it was. They wouldn't give context. They just, like, clammed up and wouldn't follow up and say anything about it. And it's like, it's such an inflammatory bombshell to put out there into the world, into the media. You can't just give people a little taste of that and then go, oh, well, I'm not going to, like, give you the whole story, because now everyone's playing this guessing game of, well, which royal is the racist one? Is it Charles? Is it the Queen? Is it Kate? So we're all guessing, like, who didn't want a black baby in the family? And, like, if a public figure in the royal family with that much influence is a racist, like, doesn't the public deserve to know? That would be in the public's best interest, would it not be? Like, it's kind of unacceptable and they should be held accountable, especially in this climate. So why aren't you naming names? And then on the other side of that, what if this comment is out of context? What if the comment was something like this? Say, for example, Charles said it, all right? Just for Charles goes, the conservative British media, like Katie Hopkins, could be racist towards Archie if he has darker skin. So, you know, that would be a shame. Are you prepared for that? Like, there could be, have been something like that. And then if that's how the statement was said, then it has a whole different meaning. So for them to just put it out there in the way they did, such a cop-out. And, you know, someone on Twitter said, and I kind of agree with this a bit, is that Meghan and Harry may have done this in a calculated way as like a preemptive strike against the royal family, a bit like, you know, if you try to take us down and you want to, like, you know, bring some receipts out on us, like, we're going to name one of you as the racist because we've put it out there now. People are asking the question. So just try it and we will name and shame. So now, the racism accusation in general as a whole. So I will say that it's very naive to think that race would play zero part in how Meghan is treated. Like, of course, there's going to be a bunch of old racist Anglophiles in Britain that don't want the royal lineage being mixed in with a black American. Like, that's going to exist 100%. It's definitely there, but it's too extreme to act like that's the majority viewpoint or that's how, like, everyone feels towards Meghan and that all criticism on her is just based off of racism. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, yeah, I'm sure it's, like, a portion of it, but is it a large, sizable portion? I don't think so. It's definitely not the majority, in my opinion. That's where Americans do jump the gun because they are projecting their own, you know, racist history of their country onto Meghan and onto the royal family. And yes, obviously the royal family has like history of racism and everything, but Americans are looking at it too much through their own perspective. And then I think it just annoys the British public more because I think the British people feel like, well, we're being forced to like Meghan now. And if we say anything against her, we're just going to be called racist. And then that's just going to make them resent Meghan even more and like double down. And it works both sides because it's kind of like then they're going to double down on not liking her. And then like, you know, the Meghan supporters are going to double down on like, you know, defending her and like attacking anyone that has anything negative to say about her. So it's just a mess. There's just a lot more to her situation. I think the race is like one piece of a like large puzzle. Like there's just so much at play with like the classism and the royals and the history and the America and Britain. And it's just like, it's a whole big thing. So yeah. And look, moving on from that, like Harry and Meghan denied this, but I do think that they just wanted to do the royal thing in their own modern way. And they couldn't because there's certain rules and protocol to it. So probably after some push and pull back and forth from both sides, both of them, like the royal family and then Harry and Meghan, probably just kind of had enough and they just split off. And it's just, it's like a breakup. You're like, you know, we're trying to make this relationship work, but we're both in different stages of our life and now they're broken up and they're better for it. So I feel like everyone needs to relax because, like, everyone in the end has kind of got what they wanted. Like, Britain still has William and Kate and they're very traditional and they love the whole royal thing, so they can keep on doing that. By the way, this interview, I think, in subtle ways painted William and Kate in a negative light, which I don't know if I agree with. Not that I'm, like, these, like, a fan of William and Kate. Like, I barely know anything about them and I don't really care, but I saw a lot of people, especially Americans again, like viciously attacking William and Kate. And I just thought like Harry and Meghan don't want that. Like Harry and Meghan would be appalled to see people putting down William and Kate in such a cruel, vicious way. Like look at some of the tweets, you know, putting them down to like lift them up because it's fucking Harry's brother and they've been through like hell. He said in the interview, like verbatim, like we've been through hell together. So they've been through so much together. It's still, you know, Meghan's family by law. Meghan says that she's a big, you know, feminist and everything. So she probably wouldn't want people shitting on Kate to like uplift her unless she's some kind of, you know, sociopath, whatever, which some people say. But yeah, like I'm saying, Britain still has William and Kate to do the whole traditional royal thing. So you've got them, like they're a lovely couple. Enjoy them. And now Meghan and Harry get to do what they want. Like Harry doesn't have to be in the royal bubble anymore. Meghan gets to make millions and millions of dollars. I mean, possibly billions at some point, because I think her name is going to be so lucrative. And that's what she's always wanted for. Like, there's no need to feel sorry for Meghan Markle. Like, the people, like, having the pity party for her, I just think, oh, my God. Like, once her podcast is up and running and she's on Instagram, like, she's probably going to be the most influential female figure in the world. Like, she's always wanted to be famous. She's always wanted to run in these elite circles. And now she's got it to, like, such an extreme degree. Like, Meghan and Harry have a $100 million deal with Netflix. I don't even know what their Spotify deal's worth. I can't even imagine. And then God knows what else they have in the pipeline. Like, they could do anything they want. Like, the whole world is their oyster. Like, they're actually going to be insufferable moving forward, trust me. Like, they're going to be the most super elitist, like, most annoying couple ever. Like, now we're kind of loving them because it's like fresh and new because they're broken away and like we want to see what they're doing. But in a few years from now, it's going to be like, oh, Meghan and Harry, like, fuck off. It's kind of like the last episode where I told you about her wearing those diamond earrings from like the evil Saudi prince. Like, she's going to be rubbing shoulders with the most evil politicians and oligarchs and like tech billionaires of the world. Like, you know, the Pete Buttigieg's and like Jeff Bezos's of the world. And just because she'll walk around in like a feminist t-shirt, it'll be like, you know, a black t-shirt with feminist across the chest, and she'll talk about diversity in Vogue, like all the normies will just love her, and you won't be able to say anything about her. I mean, you kind of can't say anything about her now. I mean, you can in Britain because like they kind of hate her. I feel like in more in the American media sphere you can't. And I don't hate her, by the way, at all. Like, I'm very neutral to her, and I think people with like strong opinions about her are just like, they need help, because I don't even know if she's that worth having, like, such intense opinions about. And, like, I kind of admire her hustle. Like, someone that has been trying to make it in Hollywood and tried to be an influential figure is now about to be the most powerful woman in the world. It's kind of incredible. But, like I said, in a few years from now, I'm definitely going to turn into the biggest Meghan hater. Like, I can already predict it. And she's going to be like the face of Givenchy with Kamala Harris or something. It's going to be so annoying. You know what I'm really enjoying following in the media at the moment is the downfall of Andrew Cuomo. You know, now that he's been Me Too'd and like sexually harassing staffers and killing old people. I want to talk about this for a second, not for like a political rant or anything, just because of all the dumbass fucking celebrities that fawned over this psychopath for the last year. And now they look really stupid now that the receipts have come out. So let's get into it.
All right. We're back with Governor Cuomo. Can I say that I am a Cuomo sexual?
You know, yep. Ellen DeGeneres went there while video chatting with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo on Monday show.
You know that that's going around, that people are saying they're Cuomo-sexuals.
It's the cute brotherly moments like that that has America totally swooning over the Cuomo brothers. Yeah, they have been all kinds of cute, and America is freaking loving it. Now, a source close to Chris tells ET, the brothers are aware of the Cuomo crush and hashtag Cuomo brothers. They think it's cute and playful.
For the people listening outside of America who don't know who he is, Andrew Cuomo is the New York governor, and his brother Chris Cuomo is one of CNN's top news anchors. They're both really sleazy, but they're super famous because the media loves them and celebrities love them, and the media just like fawns and gushes over them all the time because they're like kind of good looking. So I don't know, people just like them because of that. I actually think Andrew is repulsive. He looks like an old basset hound with like a leathery Florida retiree tan, but I will admit that Chris is daddy AF. He's fucking hot. Like, I actually followed Chris on Instagram for a while a few years ago because I am very attracted to him, but then I had to unfollow because of his terrible personality. Like, eventually the personality outweighed the hotness. He's for sure one of the most hateable CNN hosts, and they're pretty bad. Like, it's a fucking low bar with, like, Anderson Cooper and the rest of them, but Chris Cuomo really takes the cake, I think. Anyway, his brother Andrew really really crossed over into the mainstream last year and like blew up as like a celebrity, basically, because he got built up as this hero who had like saved New York from COVID, and he became this new it guy, even though he didn't. But, you know, it was all based off of these like televised news briefings that he was giving during the pandemic. And I guess people thought he was handsome and charismatic on camera, and it was enough to turn him into this media darling. It's just the stuff that people fall for, I can't even. Like, celebrities started gushing over him. He was awarded an Emmy. I don't know if they invented the category to give him an Emmy or if it was already there and they just, like, did some maneuvering to give it to him, but they gave him a fucking Emmy, and he rushed out a book on how he beat the COVID crisis. Like, newsflash, like, we're still in COVID. It's not even finished. But last year he published a book about beating COVID. I don't know how that works, but became a bestseller, which is just wild to me. And why does he have an Emmy award? Like, it's that sick celebrification of like American politicians that I always talk about. It's so bizarre. It would not happen anywhere else. Like, that would not happen in Australia. Anyway, it's all come crashing down now because Andrew's been Me Too'd and the floodgates have opened and like the tea is being spilled. And because of the Me Too stuff, like, he's actually being covered more objectively now, specifically on this one issue on how he handled the coronavirus. And I'm not going to get into like the nitty gritty of it because it's not a political podcast, but in a nutshell, he just like sent a bunch of infected elderly people back into these like for-profit nursing homes, and there were deaths. And then all these questions have come up about like where he was getting money from and lobbyists and donors and this, oh my God, like it's a really bad thing. And they were like cooking the books about like the number of deaths, like they weren't reporting all of the deaths. It's really fucking bad. Like, if you look into it, it's really evil. And I actually kind of think, on a side note, that the Me Too stuff may have been put out there intentionally to distract from this, because this is so bad. It's such a evil level of corruption. And the Me Too things that have come out, it's nothing that's like extreme. It's more just like, you know, he was inappropriate. It's nothing. It's no like Harvey Weinstein level stuff. So I'm like, this is convenient that this is coming out to like to distract from that other story that could destroy your political career. Anyway, like, the media is finally covering it now, which is crazy, because I knew about a lot of the nursing home stuff. Like, a lot of new stuff has come out like recently, but I knew about like the basics of it last year, like ages ago. The indie media that I follow was covering it, and now it's like the mainstream are finally addressing it. And it's so sick that they're only talking about it now, while last year, like, the stories on him was all like about getting an Emmy and his best-selling book. Someone on Twitter got the Vogue headlines about him, and they were just sick. It was just like, you know, Cuomo's our new crush, like just constant articles like that. And then at the time when they tweeted this, I don't know if Vogue has done it since, but like, they hadn't even covered the Me Too stuff. So it just shows you how biased the media is. And what I love about this is, like, as depressing as it is because of like what he's done and everything, I just love seeing it blow up in these celebrities' faces who were going out there like championing him in the media. Like Chelsea Handler, for example, who is possibly the saddest human being on the entire planet. Like, she spent all of last year just talking about how much she wanted to bang him. She actually asked him on a date, and she had a whole bit in her last stand-up special about him and how like hot he is and how much she loves him. And the stand-up special, by the way, one of the most unfunny things I've ever seen. I think I may have mentioned it in a previous episode. And like, go on YouTube and watch the trailer of this comedy special. You'll be like sitting there like stone-faced because it's so unfunny. Actually, I'll play a clip of the Cuomo bit now, okay?
The thing is, I like older men, which brings me to the strong and deep sexual feelings that I have developed for Andrew Cuomo. I want him to flatten my curve, and then I want to flatten his curve, and then I want us to apex together.
How is that even a joke? Like, it's so lame. Televised stand-up specials are supposed to have your best material. So, like, that's her best material? Actually, that's, like, featured in the trailer as well. So that's, like, that's the best material of her stand-up special. Flatten My Curve is, like, the best she has. yet she's one of the highest paid comedians in Hollywood. That's the kind of corny joke you would keep in if you were doing a like nationwide tour and you had a show in New York and you just like throw it in there as like a cute thing for the New Yorkers, for the locals. And that's like the only time you would do that bit. Yet that's like the main piece like featured in her last fucking stand-up special. And who is paying her for all these stand-up specials? How does she keep getting them? Because they're horrible. She hasn't had a funny stand-up special in like since Chelsea Lately days. It's just really sad how far she's fallen. I used to be a fan of hers. Like, I loved how mean she was and how biting. Like, I loved when she used to go on Howard Stern back in the day. Not the new Howard Stern appearances, which are, like, unlistenable. But the old school Howard appearances, I thought she was so funny back then. And she was just so mean. And, like, it was just really entertaining because no one was, like, really as vicious as her. She kind of had that as her lane. And, like, it was a cool thing. And now she just talks about, like, blowing Andrew Cuomo. And she does documentaries on her white privilege. And she has nothing interesting or substantial to offer on serious topics like race. Like, you're not Dave Chappelle, bitch. Like, sit down. And it's not just, like, Chelsea, though, that is on this whole, like, Cuomo stan bandwagon. Like, Patty Stanger, Jada Pinkett Smith, Sarah Silverman, Cher. Like, they all went goo-goo gaga over this guy because he had some flashy televised news briefs on TV that they watched, and that was enough to like make them love him. So congratulations, Hollywood, you propped up another rapey white guy, except this time you found one that kills the elderly. So congratulations, you've one-upped yourself. Anyway, Hollywood is going to move on to Pete Buttigieg soon. Buttigieg, I hate his fucking name. He will be the next big politician that celebrities and the media stands, and for entirely superficial reasons as well. I mean, they already have been, but it's going to come in another wave and it's going to be worse than ever before. If you don't know who he is, by the way, he's this dopey gay mayor who ran for president during the last election, and he got a lot of media coverage. He's totally corrupt and awful, but he speaks in just constant platitudes, so the media likes him. Like, you should listen to this guy speak. Go on YouTube and look him up. It sounds like he's saying something, but if you listen closely, it's just platitudes after platitudes, and like half the time they don't even make sense. Like, you'll isolate some of the platitudes, it's like that actually means nothing. It's really bad. And you know, because he's gay, you get called a homophobe if you criticize him, which is really funny because nobody actually cares about white gays anymore. Like, if you're a gay man of color, like, it's fine, like, you still kind of like, you still have some points in the struggle Olympics, but the white gays, no one cares. And I'm a white gay, trust me, like, I don't get anything. Like, I'm basically put in the same category now as the straight males. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of do miss, like, back in the day when I was a teenager and I first came out and, like, yes, I was bullied, but, you know, I was one of the only gays in the town. It was kind of like a novelty. Like, you know, people were shocked, like, oh my God, you know, you're gay. What? And, you know, they ask you stupid questions about being gay. Like, how do you decide who's the boy and who's the girl? Like, just dumb shit. But now it's like, it's so pedestrian and like such a non-event now, like no one cares. But yeah, look, Mayor Pete, he is already signed with this huge Hollywood agency, CAA. They're like the number one, and he has a podcast, and Amazon is doing a documentary on him, which is just going to be pure propaganda. I'm not going to review it here, obviously, because it'll be too political, but just wait, it's going to be fucking awful. And there's going to be a point coming up where the media will just be blanketed with Mayor Pete nonstop because they're trying to make him president. And that's what the podcast and the, you know, the Amazon documentary is for, and the Jimmy Fallon appearances and all the shit that he does, because, you know, American politicians, they're not politicians anymore. Like, they're celebrities and they're marketed as celebrities and they have to play that game. You know, people would say when Trump got in, they're like, oh my God, how could you elect a celebrity? And it's like, well, it's been going on for a while. Like, Bill Clinton was like a celebrity. Like, what about Sarah Palin? Like, Obama for sure, you know, Kamala now, like, they're all celebrities. And then it's just kind of like, you know, the powers that be behind the scenes pull all the strings, and Mayor Pete's the next one coming up. And I'm dreading it because I actually have Mayor Pete derangement syndrome for real. Like, I've never hated a politician more than I hate this guy. A lot of gays actually hate Mayor Pete. It's quite funny because it's like his whole thing is that he's gay, and like so many gays hate him. Your own kind can't stand you. He turns me into like one of those crazy like Trump Hillary people that you see on Twitter. And it's just kind of sad because I like to pretend that I'm like above that. And, you know, I look at those people like arguing with each other and I think, oh, I'll never be that. But like Pete turns me into that. I actually fell out with a friend over Mayor Pete and it's so bad because I do think that generally falling out with people over politics is it's kind of pathetic and childish, like unless it's something really extreme. Otherwise, it's just we should just go back to like not talking about religion and politics with each other sometimes, I think. But it was like during the Democratic primary, my friend, he was a Mayor Pete stan, and I think he only liked Mayor Pete because Pete's gay, because my friend worked in like LGBT media and stuff. So I think that's why he liked Pete, because there's no other reason to like him. And I was just being obnoxious and trolling him over Pete, I'll admit. And I would like tweet him receipts on Pete, which is pretty annoying, I know. I was definitely being a pain in the ass, but my antics aside, I was sending like valid receipts. So like my friend would post something about Pete or whatever, and I'd be like, well, have you seen this? And like put the receipts about Pete, because there's a lot out there about him. You know, obviously it doesn't get covered on The View, but if you do some like digging around, he's just an awful person. And I was all in for Bernie at that time. And then my friend, totally out of pettiness, and I swear to take a stab at me, I really think he did this driven out of like personal animosity because he was annoyed that I kept exposing Pete and like shoving it in his face. Like I said, I was being obnoxious. So my friend started putting together a story in the media about like homophobic Bernie bros attacking Pete on social media. And it was so disgusting on so many levels because one, like, of course, if someone like me who believes in a lot of like, you know, Bernie stuff like I do, I was upset that my friend would put that story and narrative out there, because like Bernie's been really strong on LGBT stuff, specifically going back to I think like the 70s, like early 70s or something, like before anyone else, like when people weren't supporting the gays, like Bernie really was. So, you know, it pissed me off as a Bernie supporter and thinking about, you know, my friend who works in like, you know, quote unquote progressive LGBT media. Like, really, you're doing like a smear article on one of the most pro LGBT politicians? Like, that's fucked in itself. But secondly, like, just taking the politics out of it, like, covering tweets isn't a story. I mean, I've worked in online tabloids where you have to do that. And it's kind of like, you know, find five bad tweets about something and then you write, you know, people are outraged over Justin Bieber's offensive haircut. Like, it's not actually a story. People aren't outraged. You're, you know, manufacturing outrage. You're manufacturing a story based off some tweets that you've taken out of context. Like, the media does it all the time, especially tabloid media. And when you're doing it on celebrities, it's not a big deal. Like, of course, it's shitty journalism, but it's not changing the world. But you know, for my friend to do it and create that narrative, like on Bernie Sanders, like, you know, Bernie bros are homophobic and bullying Mayor Pete. That, I mean, that's the same as saying in an article, Bernie Sanders is homophobic, because it's guilt by association, even though you're not explicitly saying like Bernie is. You're saying, well, his supporters are, so then therefore he must be. Like, that's what the intention of the story is for. And the media does that all the time as well. And, you know, it's selective too, because every politician and every celebrity has supporters that say mean things online. Like, this friend that I'm talking about that likes Pete, he was a big Kamala supporter, and Kamala's like infamous for having her K-Hive, hashtag K-Hive on Twitter. Anyone that's remotely on political Twitter knows about the K-Hive. Like, they're fucking savage. And it's like everyone knows that like the Bernie bros, the K-Hive, the MAGA people, they just have very active supporters online. And so with that many people, with like that much of a presence online, of course you get like bad apples in the bunch and they can be vicious. I think the K-Hive is probably the worst one of all of them. Like the MAGAs are bad. MAGAs probably more Facebook. I don't know. Fucking doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? Like the point. So after that, I could just never really look at my friend in the same way again, because I just felt like he was lacking certain morals to sink that low and like write that kind of story by choice. Like, it's not like an editor assigned it to you and you didn't get to choose. Like, you really went out of your way to do a story that was like not credible on multiple levels in a petty way that, you know, is about someone that does like a lot of good. And, you know, my friend, he's like gay, he's into the LGBT scene and the media and politics, and he knows how things work. And it's like, when you put a story out there like that in such a smear, like it can do real damage, because what the media does, it's like one person does a story and then media is like an aggregator where it's like everyone just kind of copies everyone's story. So once it goes on one platform, then every other media outlet kind of feels like they have to do their own take of it. So it can snowball, and then suddenly it's like it can go from one story about Bernie's homophobic supporters attack Mayor Pete to like 10 stories on it to then follow-ups of, you know, Bernie's supporters are so evil. And like that was already a false narrative that was going on in the media as it is. So for him to contribute to that, and I don't know, I just was like, I just looked at him like in such a different light after that. And it's kind of a shame because he's so nice, and I literally couldn't have said another negative thing about that. But it just changed the way that I saw him. But you know what? That's the media for you. And that's why I love indie media. And I love all these platforms like the podcasting and Clubhouse now that I'm getting into, because it just elevates like real everyday people and gives them somewhere to have their voices heard instead of, you know, the narrative that's in the mainstream media, which is, it's so like driven by profit, and a lot of it's just like nonsense. So anytime there's like an opportunity for independent media or just like everyday people to like have a platform, like I'm so behind that and into that. That's it for this week, guys. Thanks so much for listening. I don't know why my solo episodes end up running so long. I feel like some of my solo episodes go longer than my interviews. I just can't shut up. But thank you for listening. Remember, follow me on social media, Twitter and Instagram at UnpopularJP. If you would like to support the show, it is buymeacoffee.com/UnpopularJP. The money there goes towards paying all the different fees and things that it costs to do this podcast, like the editing software and like the website host. And there's a bunch of things like the program that I use to interview people. I pay for that. So the money goes there. Is there anything else? I think that's it. Yeah. Oh, and leave me a review, of course, as I've mentioned many times this episode. I will see you all next week. Thanks, guys.